Hey, what's good? This is Rich.
And I'm Marcus.
And you're listening to Paychecks and Balances, where we talk making money, saving money, and getting out of debt, all while having some fun along the way. And on today's show, we're going to dabble in the career side of things.
And as a reminder, our first course, Debt-Free, a four-week starter kit, is available for purchase. If you've been struggling to get out of debt or you're looking to put a plan together to become debt-free, this course is for you. Learn more and sign up by visiting paybell.co/debt. Again, that's paybell.co/debt.
Also, we didn't end up winning the FedEx grant challenge, and thanks to all those that voted, but we do have another opportunity for you to vote for us in the Plutus Awards, which you can think of as the Personal Finance / FinCon Oscars. The initial nomination window is open, and we need your help to take home the award for Podcast of the Year. So if you support what we've been doing and you want to see us get a little shine, visit paybow.co/Plutus, P-L-U-T-U-S. Again, that's paybow.co/P-L-U-T-U-S. All you got to do is enter your name and email, no spam zone, and then click submit at the bottom of the page. And on today's show, we're chatting with Tracy Tim. She's a quarter-life career coach and human capital advisor that helps high-potential professionals discover their sweet spot through a mix of self-discovery, tactical training, and some much-needed tough love. Tracy believes that our unique purpose in life can be realized through our careers and wants to help people come alive at work once again. So here's our chat with Tracy. And we hope you enjoy. Welcome to the show, Tracy.
Thank you so much. I'm excited to be here.
So tell the good people, the PNB family, a little bit about yourself.
The good people. I love it. Yeah. So where do I even start? I love my story. My story is the reason why I do what I do professionally. I born and raised in Texas. Grew up, and I'm very sort of open about this, just grew up very much an achiever kid, like a performer. I wanted to do the best and be the best, make the A's, be first chair, be varsity and whatever. So I was just I call it a black belt box checker. I was just a really good kid. Like I just did everything that I was supposed to do to get to the next level and then did everything I was supposed to do to get to the next level. And while that might set you up for success in school or in college or, you know, when you're 17 and you sort of have toe the line, you know, when you graduate college and there's this great big scary world and all these possibilities and no very clear boxes to check, it can be pretty terrifying and overwhelming. So that got me, you know, through college. But then when I was deciding on my first job, I really had no idea what it was that I wanted to do. I was one of those people that had just been head down, doing the work, making the grades, studying things that at least I found interesting. Like I studied psychology in college, which I absolutely loved and found wildly fascinating. But, you know, if you don't want to be a therapist or a psychologist, and I was also an athlete, so people were saying, oh, you should go into sports psychology. Well, I didn't want to do that. So nobody really knew how to help me, you know? There wasn't like a go-to, you know, there's no class in you in college, right? There's no like, hey, here's how to do life 101 kind of thing. Here's how to make better decisions 102 kind of, you know, there's just nothing out there from a resource perspective that, right, that I could find at the time. So, you know, I did what a lot of us do in college. I went for what was coming for me. And so I went to Yale, which is a really amazing place if you want to get a job in finance or a job in consulting, because they recruit the hell out of Yale grads. And so I got scooped up into the finance world, and I actually spent the first couple of years of my career working on Wall Street.
What was that like?
Guys, I don't think we have time to go that deep, but it's, you know, listen, it is exactly what you think it is, right? There's a lot of pressure and stress. There are a lot of angry people, you know, there's a lot of money changing hands. So there's a lot of tension all the time. It's, you know, heavily male driven. It's felt very fraternity like to me. It's a sink or swim environment. There is no, you know, just like I said, there's no like handbook for life. There is definitely not a handbook for sales and trading, as much as I think there should be one. So the general rule was you can do something wrong once, but if you do it wrong again, you're in big trouble, because doing it wrong once was how you learned how to do it. and that was really your only mulligan. So it's just a lot of pressure. And for the first time in my life, I was really, really stressed out and overwhelmed. Plus, for what it's worth, and this is a lot of why I do what I do now, is, you know, in hindsight, I realized that I had taken, you know, this amazing athlete, let's say, of a professional person myself, and put myself in a game that I had never trained for, wasn't naturally good at, and didn't care about. So it was like taking, I don't know, let's say you take Michael Phelps and you put him on the track next to Usain Bolt and you're like, well, you're both Olympic athletes. You should perform here. Mm. Well, it's right. It's not in his nature. He hasn't practiced it. He doesn't probably care about track as much as he does about swimming. So, you know, I took myself, who I love people. I love speaking. I really enjoy, you know, positive collaboration and working with people. And I was sitting in a chair for 12 hours a day behind four computer screens, analyzing bond math and getting yelled at by angry dudes.
That sounds awful.
It was a recipe for failure, right? Like I had literally put so many barriers between me and extraordinary results, right? Like, because I was a performer, I could do the work and I could get by and I could make myself useful. Ironically, I made myself useful doing the people stuff that nobody else wanted to do, like making friends, instead of my actual job. But, it, that's kind of the sink or swim thing, right? You either find a place where you're valuable or you don't. And yeah, that's what I really heavily focus on in my business now is like, let's just get clear on what kind of athlete you are and what kind of game that you want to play, and not allowing the world to dictate the game that you're playing. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I totally love that. And so what sport did you play in college?
I played softball in college. I got recruited to play that at the varsity level. And I made it 2 years, which we don't have to go into. But I'll tell you what, playing softball in Connecticut in January and February is way different than playing softball in Texas. So I didn't really love it. But then I ended up playing club volleyball after that and had the best time. And actually, we won a national championship my senior year against the University of South Carolina. So
nice. Wait, so club volleyball, which is different from...
Yeah. Yeah. Isn't it crazy?
How does that work?
Yeah. So there's two intercollegiate levels of athletics. There's probably more, but these are the two that I know about. So varsity is the one that we all see right on TV all the time. It's the one where you have scholarships and what have you. But then also the schools, generally speaking, will allow for a club level, which is like, you know, kind of one step down, but and very low in funding. But you still get to play against other schools. So we would travel to tournaments and play against a bunch of other schools. And then we qualified for nationals, which was crazy. So there's this huge national intercollegiate volleyball tournament, men and women, that happens every single year. It's like it's like a meat market, let's be honest, right? It's craziness. But we had so much fun and we ended up going undefeated through the whole thing. It was just bonkers. Like, we did not expect that to happen. We were this motley crew of people who, you know, had been like out drinking the night before, and we had a great time with it. It's where all the pressure went away and we all just got to have fun. If you're listening to this and you're in college, you had no idea that was out there, go find a club sport. It's really fun.
So there are so many ways that I can go with this right now. And you were talking about working on Wall Street, and actually I will have some follow-ups, but from that role in Wall Street, where did you go next?
Yeah. So, you know, I really hit a breaking point, and this is something that I talk to my clients about a lot. So if you're out there and you're listening, you know, you're part of the PNB family and you're unhappy in your job for any reason, it's going to start wearing on you over time. And I tell my clients this all the time, that either you choose to make a move or the choice will eventually be made for you. Whether that's, you know, you're hating your job, so you're underperforming and you eventually get fired, or it's you're hating your job, you're underperforming, it's impacting the rest of your life, and you hit a mental or physical barrier where you just can't take it anymore, which is what happened to me. I vividly remember this. I flew out to Notre Dame for a friend's wedding, Labor Day weekend of 2012. And if you know me for all of 5 minutes, Rich, you know that like I love weddings. I love people. I love love. I love dancing. I love red wine. I'm like, weddings are where I love to be. I love wedding invitations. So if you're out there, you want me to come to your wedding, I'm a lot of fun. You know, this weekend, I literally could not stop thinking about how miserable I was at my job. And we had just had this major reorganization and we had laid a ton of people off and it had just become a really negative place, even more so than normal. And the night of the wedding, during the reception, where normally I'd be dancing and again, drinking red wine, I was sitting on the curb outside of the venue, just crying. Like I couldn't hold it together anymore. And a friend of mine came out and sat next to me and was like, "This is not you." Like a friend from high school. Your high school friends know you well. And he just was like, where did the happy, you know, fun, like alive version of you go? And it had been, you know, it had been erased. I was a shell of myself. And literally I got on the plane home. I typed up on my old iPad version one, my quitting speech. And I gave it on Monday when I got back. And that was like October 1st or whatever. And so, yeah, I quit. I quit with no plan. I quit with no prospects, no job, no nothing, which I don't recommend. But I got really, really lucky. They let me stay for like an interim 2 months until I figured out what it was that I wanted to do. And then I decided I was going to put everything in storage, not get just a new job because I was way too messed up from that job to make any sort of good life decisions. And I re-enrolled myself in school and I actually went on what's called a semester at sea, which I don't know if you guys have heard of that before, but
no, what is that?
The coolest thing ever.
So to me, it sounds like being on a ship or on a boat and like reading books and taking classes, but I'm sure that's probably not what it is.
Exactly what it is. It's amazing. So it's literally a semester where you live on basically a defunct cruise ship. It's not huge. It's like 7 stories, 8 stories, something like that. And you live there for 4 or 5 months and you sail around the world and you get off in certain ports and you stay there for anywhere from 2 to 6 days and you get back on and you take class while you're on the boat. And then when you're traveling, you're completely free. You do whatever you want. And they have excursions you could go on kind of in the same way that like a cruise would, or you can just literally take that time to do whatever the heck you want as long as you met back up with the ship when that port was over. But it's for undergrads. So it's semester at sea. So undergrads enroll in that instead of, you know, going and studying abroad, let's say. And they end up with like 4 or 5 credits, you know, or I guess, yeah, that's how we counted them at Yale, but you know, 4 or 5 classes worth of college credit when they get back. So I was doing what I teach my clients to do now, which is test driving their career assumptions in minimum viable ways. So instead of taking like a full-time job to see if you like X, Y, and Z industry, you could shadow, you could volunteer, you could do an informational interview, right? There are just really strategic ways you could test out your ideas. And I was testing out whether or not I wanted to go back to school, whether or not I wanted to just go travel, really, like take some time away and just be kind of by myself, or if I wanted to work in the sort of nonprofit space, because on the ship, there were a ton of nonprofit and for-profit social enterprise businesses mm-hmm. that were traveling with us. And so we got to work with them and study with them. And so I wanted to see if I wanted to go that route too. So 4 months later, I came back with, thankfully, I had just met I had an incredible time, like saw the world, right? We sailed once around the world. And then really just a deeper, better understanding of myself. Like I had finally got to hit the pause button on the world's expectations for me and everybody else's definition of success and get back to the athlete that I really was, you know, get back to what I was naturally good at, what I actually enjoyed doing, what I was gifted towards, you know, and then what I had learned how to do over time. And if I wanted to even leverage that at all, how could I in service of what I wanted to do in the future? So I was really lucky that I met some incredible mentors who helped me figure that out.
So you describe yourself as a quarter life career coach. And I guess I'm wondering, because that seems, I think I'm going through a quarter life crisis. I might be rounding down. It might be a 1/3 life crisis at this
That's
point.
What I was thinking, but I wasn't going to say it.
So I'll be writing about that next month. But that being said, like what age was this going on? How early did you have this aha moment or this epiphany?
Yeah, I was 25 when I quit my job. I was exactly 25. Actually 24 and then turned 25, like, you know, 10 days later. And then when I was on semester at CEI, I was 25, which was odd because I was with all undergrads. So it was like 19, 20 and 21 year olds who are looking at me like mama bear, like, what's the real world like? And I was so scarred, you know, I'm like, don't ever graduate. But it was just really interesting. Yeah. And that's what I used to focus on, was kind of that quarter life space and really going through that period of self-discovery. What I found though is that people who are waking up, no matter their age, but are waking up and realizing that they're not alive in their life, you know, they're not alive in their career, they don't feel alive most days. That could be anybody. 25 is maybe your first opportunity to have it happen, but most of us ignore it, right? And you just put your head down and keep going. But it happens at 35, 45, 55. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's why I want to ask a follow-up, if you can kind of unpackage that a little bit, because I think some people may be experiencing that, but they don't know what it is. That's why I thought 25 was young to feel that way, but maybe it's because you're just not comfortable recognizing the feeling. Can you tell people like what that realization is? So they might be going through it, but they might not know how to describe it.
Yeah. Mark, that's a really good question, actually. I'll tell you that for me, here's what happened. This is a good story, actually, to kind of highlight how this might be going for you. So a lot of us are zombies in our jobs and in our lives, and we don't realize it. Like, we just allow the circumstances around us to dictate what we do, and we get really comfortable doing that, right? So if I have bills, or I have a mortgage, or I have a kid, or whatever, well, I use those circumstances to kind of decide what I am capable and not capable of doing, right? So whether or not I can quit my job if I'm miserable, or whether or not I can go on vacation, whatever, right? And it takes some type of event to wake you up. And I had one happen to me. So on the trading floor, I had a bunch of friends, but I had one friend in my, just to be clear, I had more than one friend. I just wanted to make sure.
I mean, if you had one friend, we would not judge you. That is totally fine.
But it came out funny though. I was like, why didn't I say I have one friend? I had one really close friend who was 1 year younger than me. So we were all analysts, and analysts come in and have like a 2 year position at a bank where they kind of figure out their role. And it's almost like a test drive period, right? And then if they want to keep you on afterwards, you become an associate, and then you're on the conveyor belt to VP, managing director, et cetera, et cetera. So I had one friend who was a year younger than me in the analyst program. And he was an analyst in credit, which means that he was like looking at spreadsheets all day and, you know, running, crunching numbers and looking at balance sheets and whatever. And I was in sales. So I had direct client contact, and I was the go-between between our traders and my clients to make, you know, to make business happen. Right. And so, you know, the gold standard of sales and trading is that you're sitting there for 12 hours a day and you're constantly vigilant and ready to take business. Because if you're up in the bathroom and one of your clients pings you to make a trade and you don't answer right away, they're going to go to the bank across the street.
Wait.
What?
So
what?
Were people wearing like wireless headsets and going into the bathroom so that they didn't miss?
Oh, yeah. Isn't that horrible? We used to make fun of those people. Like at the very late, like the credit guys were really old school. Like that's, have you ever seen like Boiler Room or, you know, like, so Wall Street is changing, right? Everything now goes through a system that's called TRACE. So like you can actually see the cost of stuff in real time, which was really the shady part of Wall Street back in the day. But the only thing that's remaining that's hard to trace are bonds, right? Because they're physical. And so in my department, it was literally guys with like their heads underneath the desks, like, you know, on the phone, like, and you're like, cause we're all, you know, an arm's length away from each other. So it was just super old school, and we used to make fun of people all the time. And so there were some people in other desks who would do exactly what you're talking about. And it was so disgusting. So horrible. But anyway, I guess I gave all that background to say that we only left the desk so many times a day for very specific purposes. So like I could go up and get breakfast and bring it back, but I had to eat at my desk. I could go up and get lunch and bring it back, but I had to eat at my desk. And I would take one break in the afternoon to grab coffee. And this guy, my friend and I would do that together. And our office had this really beautiful terrace on the 8th floor. And so we worked on 6. So we would go up 2 escalators, grab coffee, take a lap around the terrace and come back down. It took all of 5 minutes. And we did this literally every day. And even then I got shit for this. It was my 5 minutes. I was like, you're not taking my one break. So we'd go and we'd walk. And, you know, when you make the same lap every day, you see the same stuff every day. And it turned out that one day on the terrace, we were overlooking this creek that ran next to the building. And there was this tiny little bridge that connected roads on either side of the creek. And one day they were doing construction on it. And that was odd and new. And so I just like mentioned it to my friend. And he literally, you guys, like I can see it like it was yesterday. He did a double take. He looked at me and his face like was lit up. His eyes were bigger than normal. He kind of like had his chest puffed out and he took a big deep breath and he was like, oh my God, Tracy, I studied engineering in college and I love construction and here's what they're doing. And he just went, blah, 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 like, you know, cement and how many people were working on it and what happens to cement in the wintertime and blah. I mean, I like lost him. He was just in another world because he was talking about something that he could talk about passionately without even trying. And I had worked with this guy for an entire calendar year and seen him come in every day with his head down and see him leave every day with his head down and party with him on the weekends to where he was like, you know, blackout drunk, like we always did because we were numbing ourselves to the fact that we were miserable every day. And he was a totally different person. And I was angry actually, because the only reason I was still at the bank was because I didn't know what the hell I liked that much, right? Like I didn't know what I would do instead. And here was this guy who had this passion and excitement and this body of knowledge in something that he had studied, which is rare, and he wasn't doing it. And I was like, what the hell are you doing? Like, why are you still here? You have this thing that you love. And he literally said to me, this is what I have to do. This is what successful people do. This is how you make money. Mm-hmm. And it blew me away. Like, I don't think I really realized what had happened until I sat down at my desk again and was like, whoa. And that's when I took a look around. I'm like, do I want to be any of these people? You know, do I want to progress to any of their quote unquote levels of success? Do I want their personal lives? Do I want the amount of leverage they have? Like, do I want this? And the answer was resoundingly no. And I think that a moment like that happens for most of us. And you either ignore it and move on, or it really rocks you. Like it hit me in like a foundational area where I just realized like, oh my God, if I stay here, I can see the rest of my life. Like I can see the bad marriage. I can see the kids going to, you know, boarding school. I can see the car that I would drive. And I just was like, I don't want this. I don't know what I want, but I don't want this. And if I stay here any longer, I'm going to be trapped.
What's good, folks? Tracy is bringing that passion, and we're bringing you this week's sponsor. Payday is crucial, and what often goes unspoken is the payroll provider. In comes Gusto, which makes payroll, taxes, and HR easier for small businesses. Gusto will automatically pay and file federal, state, and local taxes, so you don't have to stress about it. They make it easy to add on health benefits and 401k. Those things you know that we need, but as entrepreneurs, we may not have the time or know-how to do the right way. Also, if you have employee issues come up, Gusto has certified HR professionals on staff across all 50 states. P&B listeners get 3 months free when they run their first payroll. To learn more and sign up, go to gusto.com/paychecks today. Again, that's Gusto. GUSTO.com/paychecks. And if you're not making these decisions, you might want to tell someone at work about it. And now, back to the show. I totally get it. And I'm sitting here and I'm thinking about various points in my career. And I can remember being in one job, and I won't say which job, but I can remember being in one job. And when I finally got the offer to move to another position, like, I actually cried. Like, I hated it so much. And that new opportunity felt like I was being freed from all sorts of, basically, I was just on the phone all day. It was kind of a sales-oriented role, and, you know, I'm an introvert, so just, like, talking all day, talking about stuff that I'm not really excited about, working with people in many ways that I was not excited to work with, and knowing that, you know, I had all of these other talents and all of these other abilities and these things that I studied that I really wanted to do, and not getting to do those things for years, it took a toll on me. And I think another thing that happens when people get to that point, and this more so happens when folks aren't proactive, is that they often take the first thing that comes their way because they're so desperate to get out of that situation. So can you talk a little bit about that side of things, and maybe the implications that that might have on negotiation?
Yes. And it's going to require me to throw myself under the bus, but I'm willing to do it for you guys. So the risk of running from something instead of running towards something is very, very real. Like, what you just touched on is the number one sort of inclination of somebody who's miserable doing what they're doing. So, like, I just want to get the hell out of here, right? I just need to make a change that'll make things better. And I'll tell you what, in my experience, because I actually did that once after Wall Street, that was not the end of my horrible career choices, which is why I'm a career coach now. Because I do not stand on the shoulders of I've done everything right. I stand on the shoulders of, you want to dodge a bullet? Come work with me, right? Like, if you want to get there faster, I will give you all the learning curve you need and more, because I've done everything there is to do wrong. And I at the time I had been working for this woman who was running her own company, and she was a speaker, and she did leadership and emotional intelligence and diversity training for companies. And she'd written a best-selling book and blah, blah, blah. And she decided to go back into the corporate world, which kind of left me SOL at the time. I was really cobbling a life together. I was, this was a few years after the Wall Street thing and after semester at sea. I literally, because I wanted that freedom and I was probably sort of reacting really poorly to my time at the bank, I was working, I worked at a Lululemon. I was waiting tables at a local steak place. I was working for her. I was writing freelance like content online. I was just trying to make it work. Mm-hmm. And all of that gets stressful after a while. You know, I was doing it in service of trying to find the thing that I wanted to do, but it was keeping me so busy and so stressed that it was hard to have an open possibility mindset the whole time. So I got really scared, and I just was like, I got to fix this. I need a paycheck, and I need dental insurance, like, now. So I took a full-time job with a company that I did very little vetting of, and they did very little vetting of me. They just loved the Yale thing. They loved the Wall Street thing. And they were like, you're smart. You can learn fast. Just come work with us. And we'll make it happen.
That sounds thorough.
Right. I know. And I'm like, all those things are true. And they were going to pay me, and they're going to give me benefits again. And, you know, happy days, except that I didn't do a good job of figuring out what I was getting myself into. And lo and behold, 3 months into that job, I got let go. And I could see it coming. It was the writing on the wall. It was a horrible fit for both of us. They had me in this like client success role, which is really like handholding and babysitting. And I suck at that, admittedly. I am much more on the like big picture, vision, innovation, the high level stuff. The details are what kill me. And then having to sort of like be the the person that sweeps up all the shit all the time was just, I'm not good at that. Some people are great at that. I'm terrible at it. So, I mean, I got let go. And the risk that you're running by, you know, just putting a Band-Aid on a bigger problem is that, remember, I mean, Rich, we talked about this right when we got started. The decision is going to be made for you. If you don't take control of your own life and test out your assumptions and work hard trying to find the thing that you love, your choices are no longer yours. You're not in the driver's seat. You're not in control. When you don't have clarity, you don't have confidence. And when you can't confidently make decisions, the world is going to dictate what happens to you and you become a victim. And that's exactly what happened to me. And quite frankly, that's why I started my business right then and there. I was like, I've been, you know, beating around the bush for years, thinking about doing this, thinking about building a strategy that can help people with career clarity. I've been doing everything that the opposite of what I would teach. Like, I'm just going to take my own medicine and I'm going to go for it. And that was 5 years ago. And it's been a crazy roller coaster ever since, but it's been wildly successful. It's sustained my life for 5 years. It's grown every year. I've been able to do really cool stuff and live the life that I want to live in the meantime. I really caution people. It's scary though, right? Like if you're miserable at a job, it permeates the rest of your life. It takes over your relationships, your vacation time. I mean, all of it, your health. And it can be really hard to put all that aside and try to think logically or try to, you know, make a non-emotional decision. And I get it, you know, because I did it. I was scared that whole time. So
can I ask a question there? I know that's difficult for people. Is there any actionable steps that people can take? Like, how do you know, I guess in this case, what you don't know? Like, I think a lot of people, if you ask them, what do you want to do? Like the guy in engineering or who had the passion for engineering, like, what do you want to do? I don't think people know how to answer that question. Is there any steps you have or tips for how they get there?
Yeah, that's a great question. And it's segues perfectly into, this is exactly what I teach, because you have to have clarity to have everything else. Clarity gives us vision and confidence in it and the ability to be back in the driver's seat. And you can't force that on yourself. It takes a process. And this is why I don't call myself a coach that often, because I started out in my business doing one-on-one coaching, kind of like what a lot of people think of when they think of career or life coaching even. And that seemed like that's how it's done, right? But what I realized really early on was it was really inefficient, because I was having to reteach, you know, everything to every person that I talked to, but also because each of them was going through the same things and each of them needed to address the same issues pretty much in the same order. So very quickly, I started to see these patterns. And after a while, I just distilled down a process that has now become our proven career strategy and clarity method, which is called the Nth Degree. And we've trademarked it and we've licensed it as a digital program. It's actually licensed to UT Dallas, which is really exciting. And, you know, I teach it at schools and sort of in companies, and I adore it because people who, you know, this was true for me, and I know it's true if you're listening and you're confused and you're stuck and you're overwhelmed. Everybody's just searching for step one. Like if I take the 5 minutes out of my day to do something about my life and my career, I want to know that I'm not wasting time. And I want to know that at the end of it, I'm going to be that much closer, right? That's all we want. Mm-hmm. And we go to the places that society tells us, like Indeed or job boards or LinkedIn or whatever. And we spend 3 hours trolling jobs that we have no interest in anyway. And we're that much more anxious and that much more upset at the end of it. Like I vividly remember being on a train from DC back to Connecticut. This is before I quit my Wall Street job. And I had told myself, self, you're going to spend at least this train ride looking at jobs online and figuring out what you want to do. Because that just seemed like the logical way to do it, right? You see what's out there, you see if you like it, and then you apply. Well, that's so ass backwards, it's not even funny, right? That's like literally, I call it the peanut butter problem. It's like giving a 17-year-old kid a grocery list and on it says peanut butter, and he goes to the peanut butter aisle and he's like, holy shit, there's 700 million kinds of peanut butter. Like, how am I supposed to pick? Right? Like if you're looking at a job board and you don't know what you're looking for and you're just looking for your dream job to pop out of the screen at you, like forget it. It's an exercise in frustration. So I wanted to be able to give people a step one that actually felt good and felt like it gave them more clarity into themselves. And this is so cheesy, you guys, but step one is knowing what the hell you care about. It's your core values.
That makes sense. That makes complete sense.
That's it. And it's not, I mean, it's not, I haven't reinvented anything here, right? It's not like I created something out of nothing. I just took what they all needed to know and put it in order. So in the nth degree, we start with three things: your now, your nature, and your nurture. And now is really important. It's not only your current set of circumstances, which I'm very clear on in every program I work on, every retreat I do, you know, everybody I work with, that we're not trying to create an army of starving artists. It doesn't serve anybody if you guys all figure out what it is you love to do and you can't make money doing it. And it doesn't help anybody if you ignore all of the responsibilities in your life, right? Like if you have a mortgage, you got to pay your mortgage. If you have kids, you got to feed them, right? Like I want people to live in reality. So the first thing we want to do is get clear on what that reality is. But then the second thing immediately is that we don't let our reality dictate what we care about. We get really clear on what we actually care about. And if you can figure out what your core values are, and I have a worksheet for this, and I'll add it to the page where we, you know, send everybody if they want more information. It's literally just going through and figuring out what are the things that really move the needle for me. Is it freedom? Is it stability? Is it love? Is it family? Is it nature? Like, what are the things that you care the most about? And that should give you a really nice sense of self. For most of us, if you're miserable where you are, you're going to see a lot of difference between what you care about and the life you're actually living. And that can be a little painful, but it's a really good check-in, right? And it helps you understand why you're unhappy. Like, oh, there's nothing wrong with me. It's not that I'm not going to be successful. It's that I'm literally playing somebody else's game. And I got down this road in this life where my actions are speaking to this totally different set of values from the ones that I really hold dear. So if you can get clear on your core values, the 2.0 of that is turning them into commitments. And that is the one thing that has simplified all of my decisions and all of the decisions for any of the clients that we work with, is that if you really commit to living a life that is true to your value set, well, then a lot of your decisions are already made, right? Like, yep. This is a great example that I learned from an executive here in Dallas. I learned this whole thing from this one guy. He and his wife sit down every year and they come up with their family's values, like 10, 11, whatever things that they're like, these are the non-negotiable commitments that we make as a family this year. And they're really basic. Like some of them were like, we will live in an old house. I was like, that's weird. I don't understand why that matters, but okay. But some of them are really serious. Like, you know, my wife gets to stay at home, or we're going to stay in Dallas until our kids graduate high school, or, you know, something like that. So, you know, he's an executive. He gets opportunities thrown at him all the time. And he was like, if somebody calls me from another state and says, hey, we want to pay you double and you're going to be the new CEO of X, Y, and Z business, you should have to move to Seattle. Well, he can literally just look at his family's commitments and be like, sorry, that doesn't fit me, and not lose sleep over it. That's the thing. And I've had so many people go through, and this goes all the way back to like, how do you not just jump at, you know, what's next when you're miserable? I've had so many people go through our digital program, and at the end of 8 weeks, they actually say no to job offers that if they had gotten them 8 weeks prior, they would have been tripping over themselves for.
Wow.
Because they finally know what their non-negotiables are. And they recognize that if I make that decision, while it might look good and sound good and pay well and whatever, I'm not going to be happy. And I can't spend any more time in my life not being happy. And my goal, you know, at the end of the, and there's many more pieces to this puzzle, right? We need to know your nature and your nurture. So that's what you're naturally good at and what you've learned how to do over time. And generally speaking, where those three things come together is a person's niche. It's like kind of what they're built for and what they're born for. And once we have that, we really have a great vision of a work environment and the type of subject matter they care about and that sort of thing. But to me, it's like, okay, just let's simplify our decisions and live a life that's true to what we know that we care about, or have rediscovered, right, that we care about. Because this is a great, one of my favorite quotes in the world is, comparison is the thief of joy. It's like, as soon as you look at what somebody else has and compare it to what you have, or you look at somebody else's definition of success and then judge yourself with those, you know, standards, it takes away all of the joy that you have in the things that you know you care about, because you're looking at it from a totally different lens. So
I know that feeling all too well. The comparison game was something that got me for years. So freedom is number one for me. So when you said that first, I actually raised my hand in the air and almost hit the shelf in my closet. So freedom is totally number one for me. And once I figured out what some of those other key values are and the things that I'm good at and the things that I get excited about, it got a lot easier to figure out what I wanted to do next. I said it on Instagram yesterday or on one of the social media platforms, because I just recently made a role change completely out of the field that I was in. And this feels like the first time that I'm combining all the things that I enjoy doing outside of work and that I'm good at with these experiences that I've picked up at work that make me a subject matter expert. And so it's a feeling that I've never had before, where I'm like, yo, I'm actually excited to go to work the next day. So this totally resonates with me. And so there's the values, critical, being committed to those values, crucial. What comes after that?
All right. So the magic sauce is finding your niche, right? So the values are super important. The commitments are there, but then we need to give it some life, right? So if I say freedom is important to me, well, that could mean a lot of different things to a lot of different people. And what I love that you just said was that you started to take into account not only the professional, quote unquote, professional stuff, but things you like doing just because you like doing them, right? Like, my job is really centered around what I said I would do if money didn't matter, which was sit and talk to people about their lives. Like, that's what I get to do. It's great. Is that all I get to do all the time? No. Are there parts of my job that are a shit sandwich? Yes. But that's true of everything, right? It's just that the ethos of what I do is there, right? And the excitement level is there. And when I talk on podcasts like this, I usually get so into it and so excited that people are like, whoa, you know, like, calm down a little bit. That's what you're looking for, is that level of interest that you could speak passionately about something. And anyway, so the next two steps, like I said, are nature and nurture. And nature we really define as what your natural gifts and talents are, but also your behavioral set and your personality. So what are the environments that you're just kind of naturally inclined towards? What do people, you know, ask you for that you don't even realize is a gift? And then what's your core personality? You know, or like you said, are you an introvert or an extrovert? Do you like to collaborate? Or are you wildly independent? You know, are you more patient and methodical, or do you have a high sense of urgency? And all of that goes into creating a vision for your ideal work environment, right? So kind of your game, if you will. So am I an athlete that plays baseball? Am I an athlete that plays basketball? Am I an athlete that swims, right? It's trying to figure that out from your nature. But then, like you said, we have to add in our nurture. What have we learned over time? And this is a great part for people who are afraid to make a change because they feel like they're starting over. You guys probably hear this all the time, right? I just don't want to start over. I don't want to have to go back to the beginning. I don't, you know, the reality is you don't have to, and you're not, it's not possible. You've been working for however long, like you've built up some type of skill or knowledge or expertise that is definitely leverageable. You just have to be creative about it. And so I work people through three things: their education experience, their work experience, and then what I call their ninja skills. So it's the stuff you like outside of work that you just didn't realize was valuable. And when you put those together, imagine like a triple Venn diagram where you have now at the top and then nature and nurture at the bottom. Where your nature and now overlap is like what you were born for, right? I care about it and I'm naturally good at it. And then where your nurture and your now overlap is what you were built for, right? Or bred for, almost, meaning I care about it and now I've learned how to be good at it. Yeah. So if I have those two components and I marry them together, that is your genius zone, because it takes advantage of natural gifts and learned gifts and puts them in the context of what you really care about. And for most people, what that niche highlights is either it's always an ideal work environment, meaning, you know, you're going to immediately see if it's a big business, if you're working at a desk, if you're remote, if you have a team, if you're independent, right? You're going to get that sense of it. But then for most people, it really highlights like what they want to stretch towards and who they care to serve, meaning what kind of problems do I want to solve? Who do I want to be around in my day? And what can I see myself working towards and going deeper in? And that's really your sandbox. That's what I call it, your niche, because it's the nth degree and I'm a big nerd and everything starts with the letter N. But it's really your zone of genius. And then after that, you know, once you figure out that, once you have your sandbox, then every year in your career, it's kind of like, where do I want to play in the sandbox this year based on what's going on in my life? You know, and that's where you reevaluate your core values and all of that comes back in. I redo mine every year to make sure that I'm still living the life that is relevant to me right now. And I'll tell you guys, this is really interesting. I'm going through this right now. I met a man about 6 months ago and I'm like, we're stupidly happy and in love and it's wonderful. But I didn't reevaluate my plans for the year with him in them until literally like a month ago. And I realized like why I was stressed out, why I wasn't happy at work, why I felt like I wasn't performing was that I had asked for this, you know, blessing to come into my life, but I hadn't made room for it. And that's the reevaluation that you do every year is, you know, your life is going to change. The only thing constant in life is change. We're always sort of evolving and growing. And so every year you go back to the drawing board and say, all right, I met a person. So maybe my business goals are going to take a little bit of a backseat for 6 months. Or, you know, we had a kid this year. So that's going to change what our family's commitments and values are. Right. So, and that's where we get really tailored with the nth degree method is that it won't have the same outcome for any two people. And you get to do it over and over again in your life. And once you master that process, then you're in the driver's seat for the long haul. You know what I mean?
Yeah. No, that makes complete sense. So have you read The Big Leap?
The Big Leap. I don't think so.
So something you said there really resonated, and that was this concept of the zone of genius. And a director at work gave me this book, and that's one of the key takeaways is that you need to operate in your zone of genius. And that's actually what led to me saying, I need to try this new role. That actually allows me to operate within that zone of genius. I really like the framework and, you know, kind of starting off with the values and then also the idea of periodically revisiting those values because things do change over time, you know, and what's important now may not be important 6 months from now. And then also considering who's in your life or who's about to come into your life and how that's going to impact the decisions that you make and probably what you consider as the North Star. So we are rounding toward the end of the episode. So if there was a key takeaway that you really wanted people to walk away with for folks that are feeling stuck or for folks that are kind of thinking about making a transition, whether it's within the same field or outside of it, what would that be?
Dang, I have so many. Yeah, I guess if that's where we're going to start, right? If it's you're thinking about it or you're dabbling or whatever, like the time is now. If you're looking for a sign that it's time to make a change, the sign is that you're looking for a sign that it's time to make a change. Like just do it. Just do it. It's so cliche to say like life is short, but in all seriousness, nothing in your life is going to change unless you take control of it. And if you're unhappy for any reason, it's worth exploring, right? It's worth it. This is your one life and it is totally worth it. And the plus, if I get like a 1.5 things to say, is that you don't have to do it alone. Like you've heard me, you've heard Rich, you've heard Marcus talk about the people in our lives who were helpful in this process. Somebody gave me a book. Somebody gave me a methodology. Somebody helped me discover, you know, I had a mentor, whatever. You don't have to do this alone. And in fact, the people who are the most wildly successful and have those wonderful, enviable lives that we, you know, aspire to, they definitely didn't do it by themselves. So if you're struggling to do this alone, reach out for a resource. It doesn't have to be me. It doesn't have to be, you know, one of us, but reach out to somebody that you think has a good solution and actually take action and go for it.
Love that. And so tell the good people of the PNB family, as you see, I'm sticking with the good people.
Love it.
Where can they learn more about you and the nth degree and then also find you on social media?
Yeah, absolutely. So all of my social is at the Tracy Tim. And that's not because I wanted it to be. It's because someone had already taken Tracy Tim and I didn't want to add numbers, but it's at the Tracy Tim. But actually, more importantly, what we're going to have set up is a dedicated web page for all of you to go to with all of the resources that we've talked about today. And that's going to be tracytim.com. So TracyTimm.com/paychecks. And that's just for you guys, listeners of the podcast. So it'll be tracytim.com/paychecks.
P-A-Y. Nice.
Oh, yeah, girl. Oh, girl. Oh, my God. I'm so tired. So paychecks. tracytim.com/paychecks. She was doing so good until that.
So I immediately thought if I was a girl and this was my voice, that would be problematic.
It's really lovely. I love talking to both of you guys. If you guys are in the car, I imagine you're just being lulled to sleep by these two guys all the time. But it's been a treat. It's been a Saturday morning treat.
Someone told us the subwoofers hit when we when we jump on the podcast. So shout out to them. Enjoy the show.
That makes me happy. Awesome. Well, you guys are great. You're doing an awesome thing for people. And it's really been a pleasure to be here. So thanks for giving me a platform and for allowing me to serve your audience. I really appreciate it.
Yes, it's been awesome. Thanks a lot. So yes, thanks again to Tracy for coming on the show and shining a light on the importance of values, something that I've thought a lot more about over recent years and have spoken on the podcast about before, because they've really helped be a North Star for me. How about you, good brother?
Great episode. I really like the quote, comparison is the thief of joy. Let's get out here and win in these streets, E Streets and beyond, and realize that we're kind of on our own journey out here, you know?
Yeah, I've definitely had the comparison game get me caught up in these streets before for a number of years, and it probably kept me back from where I could ultimately be. And I know that that's the case for a number of us. And if you enjoyed today's episode, be sure to share with your network and hit us with those 5 stars in Apple Podcasts and say a few words about the show. We've seen an uptick over the past couple of months, so we definitely appreciate y'all. And today's review of the week comes from Lives in Montana.
That might be a first. Hello, Lives in Montana. Fantastic interviews, 5 stars. These guys interview some of the most interesting people who have great stories and really helpful tips about financial well-being. We'll continue to listen and we'll probably dive into the older episodes too because the content has been so valuable thus far. Appreciate it, Lives in Montana.
Yeah, appreciate those 5 stars.
I'm still trying to figure out who that person is in the one dot listening in Madagascar. I think it's a meerkat, you know. I don't know how they got internet technology, but I'm going to put Montana as the number 2 most interesting location. So if you want to get that in there, you think you can beat Montana and Madagascar, hit us with those 5 stars.
Def.
And if you'd like to find us on social, we're on Twitter and Instagram @PayBalances and on Facebook @PaychecksAndBalances. Follow our individual accounts @TheMarcusGarrett with 1 T on Twitter, 2 Ts everywhere else on earth, because that is my government name. Rich is all over the web @IAmRichJones.
I am.
And as we mentioned up top, don't forget to check out our first course, Debt Free, by visiting paybal.co/debt.
And also, don't forget to vote for Paychecks and Balances in the Plutus Awards by visiting paybal.co/Plutus. Again, that's P-L-U-T-U-S. Thanks so much for listening. And until next time, be safe. We out. Peace.